longer. No longer at all. Well, I'm trying to think of any crap this year we might have.
We can talk about Captain Thor America.
Captain Thor America. Okay, we'll talk more about Captain Thor America. Well, welcome to Tear Gas and Gumdrops, the podcast dedicated to helping people in ministry and mission bring scriptural truths and theological ideals into the complex world of day-to-day life. I'm Chris Morton, coming to you from Austin, Texas.
I'm Kyle Sapp, coming to you from Antioch, California. My best Chris Morton impersonation. It's like if Casey Kasem were a Muppet.
It's only a matter of time.
Is him a Muppet?
Why not? It probably happened at some point in the 70s. So speaking of I don't know.
Has anyone told you that your beard is very reminiscent of like a young Obi-Wan Kenobi?
A young Obi-Wan?
It's the beard and the haircut. I swear you look like Obi-Wan Kenobi from the second Star Wars movie that shouldn't exist but does.
Hey, that was not the worst.
It wasn't the worst. You're absolutely right. Both the second and third one were heads and leaps and bounds above Phantom Menace.
There's a name for like the order that you're supposed to watch it in.
Yeah, starts with M, like Magnum or
yeah
something.
Yeah, but basically where you watch, I think it's New Hope.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Yeah, you watch New Hope, and then you go back, you skip episode one.
Yes.
And watch, I don't even remember what it was called. What was episode two called?
Attack of the Clone? Clone Wars.
Attack of the Clones.
Attack of the Clones. Clone Wars was cartoon.
Right. And then watch Revenge of the Sith. Man, that's how bad these were. And then go back and watch Empire and Return of the Jedi. I like it. I actually, there were, speaking of Obi-Wan, I thought there were some moments mainly in Attack of the Clones that Ewan McGregor, stood out. Like, I don't know why anyone since then, maybe it's just because those movies were so bad, but, like, there were some legit, like, Ewan McGregor made a pretty cool kind of James Bondish hero in that. You know, plus he had a cool beard, so.
But then he kind of flushed it down the toilet in the last movie where it just felt like he botched the emotional part of, you know, Anakin's revenge. Like, when he yelled out, "You were supposed to be the chosen one," it just came across more whiny.
Right. Which was really the problem with the whole series.
Yeah.
Just always whiny. Well,
boo-hoo.
You know what? I think that's a great transition to what we're going to talk about today, actually. Mm-hmm. We're going to actually do some whining.
I don't think we're going to do whining.
I hope not. But if we're not careful, what we're going to talk about today could be kind of whiny.
It's true. It's going to turn into the first edition of our Walking Away from the Church.
Hopefully we won't have to do multiple recordings of this one.
Mrs. Morton will never get to see that episode.
Oh, sorry. So, today we're going to talk about basically the things that we wish we could tell people in our church, but we never will. What I wish I could tell my congregation.
Yeah, we are. Tell them right now.
I guess we are.
The things we wish we could be passive-aggressive about, which we're actually apparently being passive-aggressive about.
You know, I've become painfully aware of how passive-aggressive I am over the last year. Maybe everybody deals with it, but man, yeah. It's hard. It's hard. So let's just go, and we'll just kind of go back and forth.
All right.
So give us the first one you got on your list.
Oh, no. You got to go first there, okay. Old Ben.
Let me look at my list here. Okay. I'll start with this one because I don't know that everybody experiences this, but I definitely experience it. And maybe this has more to do with just being an extrovert.
Mm.
But I feel guilty that I don't want to be everyone's friend.
Okay. So, do you feel that, is that, do you feel like because you're a church planner, it's a part of your job that you have to be everyone's friend? Or do you feel like people expect you to be everyone's friend? Or where does that, is that a Chris Morton thing, or is that something that you're feeling from other people?
I don't know. I don't know. If only I had another seasoned minister that I could talk to about this. But, yeah, I mean, of course, a lot of it's internal. A lot of it is, I think maybe I learned to be an extrovert because I had a lot, I didn't have a lot of natural social skills. And so I just kind of overcompensated, and now that I'm in my 30s, I'm kind of settling into that. But yeah, there is this sense, especially in church planting, that, man, I really want to see this church grow and succeed. And not that I don't want to have a huge church, but I do want to have enough people and momentum that, you know, we can get through the hard days and stuff like that. So anytime a new person walks in, you know, I want them to feel at home. And I also, I want our church to be that way. And I want to model that. I build it, I preach about once a month in our church, and I've gone out of my way I probably should stop doing this. I've gone out of my way to create a sports reference in pretty much every sermon. I think when you were there that I did this, make some overt sports reference, because I really don't understand sports and get sports. But I know that
I was there.
Okay, well, I guess I'm failing at my goal then. But, you know, I just want to connect with people, or at least I want to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of work. So, I don't know. Do you ever experience that?
No. There are definitely people that it's harder to go out of my way to check in on.
Right.
But I don't think there are people that are like, man, I wish I didn't have to be that person's friend. Sometimes I actually feel like the guy in the room that people feel like they have to be my friend. Like, okay.
John's
minister, so we have to care about him because he's our minister. And
yes.
He's paid, and we pay him to put up with us.
Yeah. And to those people, it's okay to just say, hey, man, just a handshake. That's great. I really appreciate that.
It's so weird if we were that honest. Like, yeah, just, no, I actually don't like you. We're just here together, and that's okay. No, you know, I think human beings are social people, and we adapt, and we adapt to whatever circumstance we're in, and we know that we have an innate need for community, and so we create that wherever we are, even if that community is solely based upon the immediate circumstances of the time.
Right.
So, it's not real, but it's also not fake.
Right. Well, I think that one's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, maybe I just wish we had easier friendships. I mean,
yeah. You know, and I mean, this is a side note, but I know that you've experienced this in grad school, and you've one thing that really impressed me when I came out and visited your church out there is you had gone out of your way to have a peer group of guys that were doing the same stuff, but not in your church community. That's something, honestly, when I saw that, you know, has really influenced me, and that I've kind of gone out of my way to, usually it means like going to events and being part of organizations and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's clunky, but it's worth it if it gives you some people that you're natural friends with.
Yeah.
You have something to talk about.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I feel like, and this isn't anybody's fault. I think this is entirely me. That's why I don't talk about this with people. I talk about this with very few people. Sometimes I feel like people are only my friend because I'm the minister.
Yeah.
And it's not super great. I mean, ministry can be a very lonely experience. And sometimes I perpetuate that by only talking to people about ministry things.
Right. That's hard.
Yeah. So I guess for mine.
Okay, first on your list.
Just so that we're set, because it's on the list, so we might as well just segue. It's not number one, but I wish people knew how lonely ministry can be sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I had something similar, so go ahead and tell me maybe what that feels like or an experience that you've had.
Yeah, it's little things. It's things like watching everyone else go out to lunch on Sunday, but not having anyone have invited me or the family.
Ooh.
Or feeling like we're always the one who invites people out to lunch or invites ourselves to lunch. And sometimes it doesn't feel like people go out of their way to invite us places.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm not mad or upset about that per se, but sometimes it's just like, you know, we're members of this church, you know, and we live thousands of miles from any kind of blood relationship.
Yeah.
That we would just like somebody to be more like a family. Like, you know, and it's always been really hard for me not to just have a relationship lately where I can just go to their house without having to plan it.
Right.
And so that's, I think, part of just growing up. But at the same time, I know lots of families that have friends who they just show up at each other's houses and there's no problem with that.
Yeah.
And I don't have that. Probably because I'm one of the only people in my age group at my church.
Right.
So I recognize that's a part of the loneliness.
But that's part of it too, yeah.
Yeah, is that I'm in a different stage of life than a lot of people. And it's in some ways an unfair expectation to think people are going to just naturally assume they know what I'm going through when they've already been through it and they've got their own things to deal with.
Right. So, yeah, that makes me wonder because, I mean, what is it that causes that? I mean, is it that do people feel awkward around the minister? Or the pastor, whatever term you use, you know, so they don't, you know, maybe they've told you something in a counseling session, and so now they feel awkward hanging out with you socially. I'm not saying you as Kyle, I'm saying you as it.
Well, and, you know, like two observations is that one, you know, not to bemoan, that I do actually have friends, you know, and
right,
there are
right.
people who I'm close to in my church, but because of the nature of the business, you know, I don't get to hang out with them much.
Yeah.
I don't get to have a small group.
You have to hang out with everybody.
Or I'm hanging out with teenagers. Hold on. I don't get to have a small group, and all of those people who I consider my friends, they have a small group, and so they're naturally seeing each other every week, but I don't have that natural connection point. It's like my third place, if you will. I don't have that because of the nature of my job, but there are still people that I do get to hang out with and I do get to occasionally be with.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, perhaps it's a little unfair that I feel guilty about sharing that. Like, I feel like I shouldn't be able to say, hey, you know, I wish people would, for lack of a better phrase, care for me more. And if a member of our church said that, then my first reaction would be, okay, well, what can we do? How can I be a better person to care for you? And I'm so glad they said that, and I'm perfectly happy for their honesty, but I don't know if ministers are allowed to share those kinds of thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I know that there are seminary classes and, you know, professionals that would tell you, you don't share those things with your church community. I'm skeptical of that.
Yeah, me too.
It's not that I don't see the reason, but I am skeptical of it.
Yeah, I think you just have to be... because, like I said, I've shared those kinds of thoughts with people, you know, some of my friends in the church, and for some of them, I think it's just kind of eye-opening that you know, you don't think about the loneliness of a minister.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Henry Nouwen wrote, probably in every one of his books, he talks about using that loneliness and how there's just kind of this inherent loneliness to the, well, he would say priesthood, but to the, right. the pastoring into that call. And so, and this is what makes me able to say this without feeling like I'm complaining, okay. is that in some ways that loneliness is a gift, because that loneliness helps me remember the people, how people feel, and how there are lots of people in our church who feel as lonely as I do. Mm-hmm. And so when you recognize the feelings that others have, that kind of puts a burden of responsibility for responding to that. And so in some ways, the loneliness is a gift because it makes me a better minister. But in other ways, it's a wicked curse because it just...
it sounds like the worst gift ever. I have no desire.
It may be the most convoluted blessing curse in the history of ministry.
Yeah, it's like
loneliness makes you a good minister and also makes you a terribly weak person.
It feels like God's really bad at giving gifts. If that's what it's like. Come on,
hey, talk to you. Maybe just no gift is perfect. Okay, so that's mine.
I like that though. I like that idea. What you just said there at the end that it does give you really some empathy. So, okay, here's my second one. I'm not doing, like, my day-to-day life, I'm not doing what I got into ministry for.
Mm. Okay.
You know, like, I guess, man, I got into ministry, and I think you saw me, like, we, you know, going to college together and knowing each other for the years. Like, I think you've seen me through most of this, but, like, I didn't necessarily ever want to be in ministry. I just kept doing it in so many ways that at some point I had to, like, say, this is what I do. This yeah. is who I am. And so some of the things that, some of the reasons that I wanted to, quote, be in ministry, whatever that means. I know that's a terrible terminology, but,
yeah.
you know, I had some really powerful experiences working with the poor. I saw, you know, people living on the streets, addicted to crack, have their lives changed because of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Like that, you know, that's exciting. You know, I have friends that are far from Christ that I want to know Christ. I genuinely believe that it changes them. I love studying scripture. I love figuring out, I mean, I love all of it. I love trying to figure out what the words mean. I love trying to understand the history. I love trying to find God's mission in that. I even love, like, the crazy, like, you know, author stuff you know, some of those fancy things that they teach you in seminary and that scare all the conservatives and... you know, just like finding out who the redactor was and the author and the different version. Like, I love all of it. That was, you know, something that was exciting for me with ministry. I really love speaking. I love public speaking. Those are the reasons that I got into ministry. Most of my day is spent sending emails. And updating blogs. I drink a lot of coffee because I can't afford an office, so I hang out in coffee shops. And that interpersonal time, that time with people, is significantly smaller than I want it to be. Now, there's room for growth and things I want to do better. But what I think that I'm feeling there is just that, like, the things that got me excited and made me want to be in it are not the day-to-day stuff that I actually have to do, that you have to do in any lifestyle, any, I don't want to just say job, but every job has the crap that you've got to do, and every job these days has email and things like that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's kind of hard to explain to people. Is because I think there is this mystique that you know, pastors or ministers are different and they have this calling on their life or whatever. And if I ever at one time in the past felt that, I don't feel it right now. And I'm doing the things I'm supposed to do. I really think so. But most days I'm just, it doesn't feel that way, if that makes sense.
So how did that change? What happened? Like, was there ever a point where you were, where you were in that, spending time with people, and then just as things got more organizational,
right,
you stopped, or, you know?
You know, that's hard. I think for one thing, there's just like energy and experience that happens in different settings that are different. You know, there's some, a lot of energy, like I'm going to change the world energy, in an 18 or 19 year old that is just exhausting in a 32 year old. So I've kind of, part of that stuff that I've grown out of, I mean, I still want to see God change people's lives, but, it's not that kind of intense keep me up at night kind of way. I do think that I'm really attracted to systems. Like, how can we do this in a big system? And I've also, like, I've utterly failed as a Lone Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
And so the combination of those two things means that I spend most of my energy on things that is, so my theory is that it's better if we do it together.
Yeah.
So that means one, convincing people what it is we're supposed to do, and two, creating environments and opportunities to do those things. So rather than me go out and, you know, make relationships hoping to share the gospel with people, how can I help my congregation understand that that's all of our job? And so that means training, and that means very specific wordsmithing in sermons. That means a lot of emails to coordinate opportunities to bring people together. And so it's not the same as having that conversation with a militant atheist where you present Jesus in a different way, and you kind of get a high from that, you know? But I would like to think that it's that, well, I just didn't see much fruit out of that kind of Lone Ranger approach.
Yeah.
And I'd like to think that we're being the church when we do these things together.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
What's your next one?
My next one is, I wish people knew how to properly communicate unhappiness.
Okay. Please tell me more about that.
It just seems like and this is getting better, but, one of my biggest pet peeves, is when people have a problem with something I have done.
Okay.
And instead of talking to me, they talk to somebody else to talk to me. And like, that was cool in middle school. But that's not biblical.
Right. Are they even that overt?
That's a good question. But just when people have like when they don't like something I've done, and then someone else will come up to me and say, so and so, or somebody, this is what they say. They
a lot of people are saying,
this person came up to me the other day, and you know, my first response, well, who are they? Well, you should tell them to talk to me. And I still, and kind of depending on what they say, for the most part, if I get anonymous complaints, I tend to just kind of say, well, it's clearly not important enough to you to talk to me about it, so it's not important. And that may or may not be true, because some people, you know, you gotta find that line between I do something people don't like, they're venting, versus this really bugs me, I wish you'd stop doing that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so, you know, third party hearing it's not helpful because it doesn't give me context, it doesn't give me any back and forth. Like the other week, we did something and we got an anonymous letter from somebody who at the end of it said, I don't expect you to agree with me or disagree with me. I just feel that it's my duty to point out when things are going against Scripture. and they signed it anonymously. And it's like, well, what if your interpretation of that scripture is wrong? You know, you don't give me, you act like I've never seen this passage of scripture before. Like, right. Clearly I have, probably read it more times than that person. And yeah, you know, so there's no give and take. There's no back and forth. There's no growth. There's just this, somewhat of a consumeristic, make me happy kind of mindset that goes on, right. Where my job is to make people happy, which isn't my job. It's not in my job description as far as I'm aware of. And I would prefer to just be able to look somebody in the eye and apologize if I've actually done something that really is offensive or bothersome or whatever. But I don't get that opportunity to make amends with them. And a lot of times it happens, not that it happens all the time, but when it tends to happen, it tends to happen with something that I wasn't even thinking about. Just an off comment or, you know, a thrown out whatever.
Funny usually.
Yeah. Or, you know, a few weeks ago, somebody was bothered that our preacher walked out during the prayer so we could get to the back to meet everybody. But instead of going to our preacher, they went to somebody else who then talked to the preacher. And it's like, just go to him. Like, don't be a child.
Yeah.
Like, it's clearly in scripture. Like, there's a scriptural way of handling it. And do that.
Do you think there's part of it is just, though, like an emotional intelligence thing? Like, you said you don't like how people communicate anger. I'm not sure. Not those. I don't know any of the people you're talking about, but I think in my own experience and other people I know, I'm like, I'm not sure they know they're angry. I'm not sure they feel angry.
Well, I don't know if they're angry or if they're just they're unhappy or they're discontent
or they want attention
or they're bothered. I don't want to presume to know the emotional state of anybody. That you know, the point is, if you should be able to be honest anywhere with people.
Right.
It should be the church, and I should be able to have you come to me, and some people do, to their credit. It's not like everybody in the church does this.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, that's kind of grown, and some of that I think comes from trust and from maturity, but people do come, and they sit, we talk, and I hear what they have to say, and I really try to reflect and learn, and if offense has been taken, if I need to apologize, and I'm pretty quick to apologize anyway. It comes from being a natural people pleaser that some of the first time I'm out there, I'm sorry. Even if I don't know what I've done, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. You have a tense voice.
So that's what society tells me to say. I think, well, okay. So I have some thoughts on this, but just real quick, like, have you had a chance to try to address this and try to teach this and see any growth in people?
I taught this to our students.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we talk about healthy conflict.
And they're going to have a lot of conflict.
Conflict is simply a part of life. People tick you off, and you have a responsibility to your brothers and sisters in Christ to have a peaceful relationship that actually is peaceful, doesn't just look peaceful. And if you have ill will towards them, you need to work that through. And sometimes that actually requires you going to that person and saying, this happened, I don't like it.
Yeah.
Please don't do that again. Or it was like a few weeks ago, one of our seventh graders, is he sixth grader? One of our junior high kids did something that really annoyed one of our seniors in high school. And they were like, they got in a super bad mood. And well, go talk to them. If you don't like what they did, you're a senior in high school.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go tell them not to do stuff because, you know, that's your responsibility. They shouldn't have done it in the first place.
Right.
It was stupid.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
You know, a junior high boy thing. It's like, but you're the one who has the conflict. You be the one who solves the conflict.
So how'd that go down? Just real quick.
I don't think that person ever did it. I think they just left and got over it.
You know, we made it. My co-planter, the guy that helps me to kind of coordinate and launch Awesome Mustard Seeds, a guy named John, and he made a joke early on when we were starting to ask people to be on our church planning team. He said, as our church grows, I hope that we make one of our core disciplines as a community the spiritual discipline of saying no to someone when they ask you a question. Just like, even in just in like, hey, you want to hang out sometime? And just, if you're like, man, no, you smell bad, just say no. You know, rather than saying, oh, I don't know, I'm really busy, I got lots of stuff going on, you know. And we were just asking so many people. And it, like, hey, we're doing this thing, it's in your neighborhood, do you want to, you know, be a part of what God is doing? And they would just say, like, yeah, man, that's great, good for you. Just say, just tell me no, so I can move on to the next person. Now, we had one guy who had been meeting, and really, I want to be careful not to say anything about specific models or anything, but he had been meeting in a very different model of how we planned our church gatherings to be like. But he really liked us. We had interacted with him for a couple of years in different ways. And so he made it really clear on the front end that he wanted to be a part of this. But then, man, maybe 2 weeks before our first launch gathering, he asked us, me and John, to go out to lunch with him. And he had a stack of 4 books, self-published by a certain author who I won't name, who thinks he's figured out the exact first century way of being church. He had a stack of these 4 books, and he took us through all the things that he thought we were going to do wrong. This was about a 3-hour lunch. And then we said, hey, man, thank you so much for sharing that. Doesn't change what we're going to do. And here's why. Let's give you our reasons. You don't have to agree with them, but let's give you our reasons. And you know what? He was running the soundboard this past Sunday, a year later. And I'm sure that he feels super uncomfortable about certain things. But man, I'll always think of him and thank God for him for his courage to come to somebody and say no and still want to be a part of community. I just thought that was so cool. Just on a side note, I make it very clear now when I ask someone if they want to be a part of something to tell me yes or no. I even say RSVP no if you can't come. Just like, please say no to me.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't always work, but it makes me feel better that we're encouraging. And Jesus said something about yeses and noes.
What if instead of doing sign-up sheets, I did sign-out sheets? And it's like, if you're not coming, make sure you sign up.
I'm going to give you the opportunity to reject me now.
Yeah.
Let's get it out of the way.
Just in the name of good communication. Just in the name of good communication. I'm not coming. Actually, our students do a pretty good job of that.
Yeah, that's great.
So they're really good at telling me no. That's their gift.
All right. Well, hey, let's do one more each. I'll throw one out, but I think that you may actually have more to say on this than I do.
Okay.
As a single guy, I fear sometimes for my future family.
Okay.
That's one thing that I am afraid to tell my congregation. I think of it for a few reasons. Like, when you look at so many of these, like, ideal ministers and pastors with their platforms and all, you know, their wife, you know, is, they either fit one of, there are two types of wives. They're either the homecoming queen, stay-at-home mom, you know, former homecoming queen, you know, just kind of perfect homemaker, or they're the, like, ministry partner, first lady of the church, children's minister, or doing their own, you know, leading their own ministry thing. And so I fear that any woman that I were to get married to would feel the pressure to fit into those categories. And I was a preacher's kid, and I've known a lot of preacher's kids. They don't always turn out too well because there's a lot of weird pressures on them. So I fear for that too. I think about that a lot with just, how's this going to play out? how can our church be a safe place for the families of the pastors and planters?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I don't have a lot to say to that because
do you not feel that pressure at all? Does Aaron not feel that pressure?
I don't. Maybe because Isaac is still at that age where it's adorable when he gets on your nerves. I guess for me, I already feel like I'm pretty open and honest about who I am, that I'm going to apply those rules to my son, and I'm not going to feel, I'm not going to let people make me feel embarrassed for how he behaves. It is annoying when people give me opinions that aren't asked for. Particularly like the big one is the somewhat passive aggressive responses to Isaac having a pacifier. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I don't care one way or the other what you think about the subject.
He's 8 years old. Lots of 8 year olds.
You know, it's
8 years old.
It, you know, like there's a way to do it, and then there's the way that a lot of people do it, where they just give me those free opinions, and I'm just like, I don't care. And I've learned in the last year and a half to just kind of just have that response, not vocally, like, oh, cool, don't care. That's a dumb thing for you to say. Stop talking. Not your son, but just in a okay, and just kind of let it bounce off. Say, it's okay. Maybe they're right. Maybe they're wrong. I'm not going to be personally obsessed about it. I know for the most part, it comes from a good place that people really do just care.
Yeah.
And they're learning from the mistakes that they've made, perhaps.
What about Aaron though? Like, what about has she ever felt that pressure? Like, she has to be at every youth event and she has to be, you know, everybody's big sister
Well, having a job kind of hinders that. And so, yeah. Never had anyone complain about it. I think she wishes she could be at stuff, but having a job, being a, you know, having a baby, has already limited her, and that bothers her.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think anyone has ever. I came in with the expectation that my wife is a regular volunteer like anyone else in the church, and so she's not gonna be at everything, And I say that to anyone who had asked back then was, when I get married, my wife is a regular volunteer. She's not a second youth minister.
Yeah.
And that's who she is. And that's, you know, who I married, and I was fine to marry her like that. I wanted that. I didn't want a second youth minister, in the family. I wanted a wife who kept me grounded, and I got that. And so, no, I'm not. I don't think she's concerned about it. I don't think she feels pressure other than her own desire to be involved, and she doesn't know how to do that yet.
Yeah, that's okay though.
Yeah,
that's a growth thing. All right. Well, what's your last one? Things I wish my congregation understood about what it's like to be a minister.
You know, those are probably all of the really big ones. You know, we talked a little bit about this earlier, my lack of third space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this kind of applies to just a youth minister. I want adult friends. And yeah. I want adults to ask me how I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I live a very rushed life.
Yeah.
And it's like, there was a group, I don't know who, but there was a group at a church a while back who felt like I didn't care about them because I wasn't coming up and talking to them on Sunday mornings, and I would just walk by them, and I wasn't showing them enough attention. And
I totally one part, that.
One part of me was just like, well, I don't... I wanted to retort, well, I don't see you walking up to me and ask me how I'm doing. But that's a true feeling. Like,
yeah.
I want people to ask me how I'm doing. I want people to walk up to me and ask me how I'm doing.
Yeah.
And sometimes I have that, sometimes I don't. Mm-hmm. And I just want people to remember that I'm not a teenager. I am a friend to our teenagers, but they're not my friends. Like, an adult friend is, you know, I'm not going to talk to them about certain things. And I'm on when I'm with teenagers. I'm working when I'm with teenagers.
Right.
It's not the same. It's not my third space.
Yeah. You know, I get that. That's honestly been a huge problem for me over the last year because just a little bit of my story was that I was a part of another church where I had some great relationships. I was also working a full-time secular job, and I was in grad school.
Mm.
I quit all three of those things at the same time. So I graduated graduate school, finished graduate school, so I lost that peer group. I transitioned. I was forced to transition away from my job. I lost my job, and so lost that peer group. And, left the awesome church that I was a part of and the relationships I had there to start planting this church. And, you know, things don't feel as tenuous as they have over the last year. But, man, I just, like, because of what I'm doing, I constantly feel like I have to be, you know, with these people, with my team that we're hoping will grow into this fully mature church. And luckily, I mean, they're really great people that I enjoy being around anyway for the most. No, I mean, all of them are really, there is a, I'm sure it's much more acute with teenagers, but there is a thing where it's like, man, I used to have friends. And what I'm realizing is that I didn't have friends. I had situations that were easy to make relationships. And when you don't have those situations, suddenly things get a lot harder. I'm trying to figure it out. I joined a gym, but it was one of these like CrossFit gyms. And I go three times a week to an actual class, and I'm paying way too much money for it. But the thought was that maybe I'll make some friends that have nothing to do with our church plant. Of course, I'd love to tell them about Jesus if that time comes, but that wasn't, you know, the reason was just to, like, I'm not, other than the only adults I talk to all day are baristas and clients. I get it. Congratulations for not I just self-edited myself for not whining.
Come on. We're to be honest without whining.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, well, this is where we still need to come up with a sign off, but I'll just throw this out here. Anything you would encourage any of our listeners who are in ministry who are struggling with these things?
Yeah, find support. Find people. Find a network. Make a network. If you don't have one, make your own network. And for all non-ministers listening, just because it's their job doesn't mean that they don't like encouragement. So make sure you tell your minister you're doing a good job. Unless they're not, in which case, lie to them.
any interaction at all. Yeah, no, I would second that. Like I said before, if you have to pay for it, if you have to pay to go to an event and people are like, oh, why do you go to conferences? Conferences are stupid. You can get the podcast. I'm like, get the podcast and then go to the conference and take somebody to lunch and make those relationships. You're dead on. All right. Well, good talking to you, Kyle. Thanks for being a part of teardrops and teardrops, tear gas, and gum drops.
Teardrops, Chris Morton, gum gas.
And you're Kyle, and we don't have a sign off yet. Yeah.
So are we done recording?
We are done.